Welcome to another round of the Best of SDHAM from the Soccer Down Here Network. John Nelson here with you. Thanks for dropping by and accessing us however you are doing so, large device or small. Off the Woodwork podcast section at 929thegame.com or the Odyssey app. For those of you that may not know, the SDHAM program is the morning flagship of the Soccer Down Here Network, the SDH Network, as you may know it in some circles. And what we like to do Monday through Friday, starting off at 9:05 in the morning Eastern time and going traditionally for 2 hours or so, we usually will go a little more than that most of the time, is we try to start your day the right way when it comes to everything going on in the sport of soccer. It's pundits, it's news, it's sound, it's highlights, it's newsmakers, and stuff that you might need to know that's a little deeper than just the average news that you get on a daily basis. And so what we like to do for that 2 hours plus is we like to bring folks to the table where we can share information and hopefully get your day started off the right way. This go-round, it's a couple of different locations. First and foremost, with Atlanta United taking on Chicago Fire later on Saturday, it's a chance to do opposition research, and that's what we do on the SDH Network when it comes to the opponents for Atlanta United on a weekly basis. This time around, play-by-play voice on the radio for Chicago Fire. Max Anderson gets to join us and break everything down about Chicago's start so far in 2026. Next up, it is a look at one of the bigger matches in the Eastern Conference on the Saturday Showcase on Apple TV. And the play-by-play voice for that particular matchup this time around, part of the Apple TV crew, one of the great guys that gets to come and hang out with us occasionally, Steve Cangelosi, gets to break down Charlotte and Nashville and what he thinks about what he has seen from them so far this season. And then batting third, there's some new rules that are being trialed in the Canadian Premier League, the Arsene Wenger offside. You have the red challenge card that is available to coaches to look at a particular play that they might disagree with a call, and they can hand in a challenge and have it looked at by VAR independent of what the booth and what the center ref might have thought at the time, plus some elements from MLS Next Pro that have made their way to IFAB, and now IFAB has sent them along, and the Canadian Premier League is like, yep, we'll try that too. Costa Smyrniotis, the senior, executive vice president of the Canadian Premier League, gets to join us and break down the whys and the wherefores and the anticipation and the expectation of what is there, and an opportunity for us to kind of catch up with him now that CPL has finished match week one and get some early feedback on everything going on with the new rules on trial in the CPL. But first and foremost, coming up around the corner, it is Atlanta United and Chicago Fire, 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app in Major League Soccer. Time for opposition research. Find out what's going on with the Fire and their play-by-play voice on radio, Max Anderson. It is 8:30 Central Time, or as the boss calls it, God's time zone. And so the man is properly hydrating, and when we appreciate that, because we want safe guesting, we want properly hydrated guests. Time for opposition research. We bring in our friend Max Anderson, play-by-play voice of said Chicago Fire, and it is an opportunity for us to catch up with Big Max. Sir, do you have where are your four-legged producers, sir?
I got my what I refer to as my assistant. My golden retriever sits right next to my chair, so if I move my chair at all, I basically run over her her tail, and then the lab makes herself nice and comfy on the couch. So they've got their different roles in the enterprise.
Just checking. You know, we have our producers as well, and they are taking care of the rest of the 40-acre lot right now, making sure that security is where things are, where they're supposed to be. And the rowdy man may come down here, and you'll hear him clattering.
40 acres, John. Sounds like I got to start a soccer podcast, man.
Oh, I know. It's like it's all out here in the backyard, and he yells at everybody. It's like that's his own personal zone where he'll go out on the front lanai. And if there's anyone within like 7 mile radius, he's like our lightning detector.
Oh, yeah.
Anybody comes through, it's like it's all there. And he'll make sure that no one comes to the front door. Or if they do, we'll know about it an hour and a half ahead of time. If anybody's out back and they're doing things they're not supposed to, he'll let you know there, too. And so he scares the bejesus out of everybody.
I know the story well.
Reason that we brought you on, other than to discuss our four-legged producers and proper hydration, is opposition research.
Sure.
And we always like to have you on, A, to talk about Chicago, but B, now that Atlanta is going up to Chicago to take on Chicago Fire this week, you are an absolute no-brainer to discuss what's going on these days. So, comma, he asked, what's going on these days, especially after holding Nashville to a big old-fashioned goose egg last weekend?
It was, I think I said on Twitter, maybe my favorite game I've gotten the chance to call in the last 4 years, and I've called some doozies. Mm-hmm. I think all things considered, what they were able to do against a Nashville side that everyone's calling world beaters, against a team that really, I think they came in 13-2 in terms of goals for and against, the Fire without Ugo Kuypers, Jack Elliott's in the hospital, finally back on the bench, might play 20 minutes, ends up playing 60. You know, you get just the injuries, the sicknesses, the international duty. You got Emba Gazelle Mbawazi, who gets back at 5 p.m. on Friday night because of flight problems getting back to Chicago. He plays a full 90. I mean, just the whole story, given the circumstances, was just unbelievable. And obviously scoring the goal 17 seconds in, the fastest goal in Chicago Fire history, was something else. Which, John, I know you usually ask me the questions. Did you see the stat on that being on how many other goals have been scored that quickly in MLS history?
I have not, sir. Please enlighten.
Well, the 17-second goal scored by Chicago Fire Soccer. If you had to guess quickly, because I had to guess, how many faster goals have been scored in MLS history?
2.
9.
Wow, what?
Yeah, I was shocked by that too. I said 5 was my guess. And when that came across in the media room, I was shocked by that. After the show, he's already, I was going to say after the show, you can Google it. But you're doing it right now.
No, there'll be none of that. all right, so fastest goals in history, but it's visual. I don't want visual, and I don't want social media. Tim Cahill, fastest in MLS history. Red Bull's topic, YouTube. Just give me a file. I don't want video. This doesn't work well. All right, go for it. Yeah,
take my word for it. Look it up after the show. I trust Fire Media when they pass that note along. I was shocked by that too, because it happens so quickly. It's one of those things when you settle in for a soccer broadcast, you're settling in. And when a goal is scored 17 seconds in, you got to make sure you're warmed up. You're ready to go. It happened that quickly. Fortunately, I felt like I got a good call off on it. But, you know, obviously it's all about me.
Yes, of course. And that's how it should be. It's like Rob Van Dam right here. You know, it's all about Max. So then when you look at, and we'll just take it and we'll roll forward. So lineup was Gutman and Bokazi, Elliott, Barroso, Chris Brady in net, Lud, Avila, Seletros in the midfield, Bamba, Haile Selassie, and Zinkernagel because of obviously the absence of Ugo Kuypers. How different was it outside of the first 17 seconds offensively with this lineup being what it was before subs come in and you sit there and you're changing things philosophically? How different a lineup was this layout going up against Nashville coming in?
Well, not as different, because 3 minutes before first kick, Joel Waterman gets scratched and Jack Elliott, who was in the hospital a week ago with sepsis or 2 weeks ago, has to start. I didn't even get to that part of the, you know, amazing part of that game and why it was so fun was you had this whirlwind of between injuries and then what happened to Waterman in pregame, which we still haven't gotten full details on, but I did see, I think he was training individually this week. Just going back and looking at my notes on that. Waterman, Rogers, and Jack Elliott were all training. So I think that's a good sign for the three of them. Ugo Kuypers and Chris Mueller were working out individually, so we'll see what that means for them in terms of the game. We'll find out more at Greg Berhalter's press availability later today. But that's the thing. It's Elliott getting back was super helpful, and that's who you want as a center back. Guy was in the hospital and lost 8 pounds a week and a half ago. The whole story was just really remarkable. And, you know, I think it sounds like things are getting a little bit healthier, but it doesn't seem to matter with this group who's healthy, who's perfect. They seem to just have this mentality of figuring out a way, whether it's Lud having to play one of his 3 or 4 position. Marin Haile Selassie has played 4 or 5 different positions through 6 games. It's really just been an all hands on deck. And while they're figuring everything out and getting everybody healthy, they still have a winning record in the top 5 in the East.
Okay, I have massively dated information. The top 5 at one point were Mike Grella at 7 seconds back in 2015, Tim Cahill at 8 seconds in 2013, Dwayne Di Rosario at 11 seconds back in 2003, Sebastian Blanco in 2022 at 13 seconds, and Deshaun Brown at 14 seconds in 2013. Like I said, that gets me to the end of July 22. So I still have about 4 more years of research.
But it gives you an idea. It's way more than two.
Yes. Yeah. So I would not have won the showcase showdown. So that would exactly. not have gone over well. You know, you look at sepsis. I mean, that's eight pounds to me. That's unfathomable. There are those of us that would like to do that, I mean, the natural way, but
absolutely. I'm working on it right now. Getting married this summer.
Whoa. Okay. Did not know about this. That we got to. Sure. We'll end with that. We'll put a bookmark.
Sure.
There. So you look at what you've seen so far this year. I think Imbokazi has turned into the early season folk hero for fans with Chicago. With all the new faces that came in and are integrating with everybody that's there, we talked about outlook and expectations and things like that, but what have you seen from the new folks, the imports that have come in, as they've tried to integrate with what Greg Berhalter wants to do?
Well, Imbokazi has advertised. I can think of probably four moments through six games where I thought for sure a point blank shot from somewhere between 6 and 15 yards was about to be taken, only for Imbokazi to come out of nowhere and deflect it up for a throw or for a corner or whatever. His closing speed in that final half of a step from an attacker is unlike anything I've seen in MLS. He's quick, but he's not fast. He's aggressive, but he's not reckless. He has, I think, one tackle I can think of in six games that felt borderline on reckless, and that's after dozens of tackles that have just been so well executed. And then wrap around the fact that he's only 20 years old. I mean, his ceiling is so high. I don't think he's long for the MLS. I think the Fire are unbelievably lucky to have him for as long as he'll be in the MLS, but with his skill, his talent, it's only a matter of time.
And you know, obviously, when you want to make sure that Chris Brady's got good sight lines and can pick up anything, and he has that trust of those four dudes in front of him, what has it been like to see Brady so far this season? Because I know a lot of folks gravitate to a zero or a lack mm-hmm. of goals given up on a week-by-week basis. Mm-hmm. Naturally, they'll look at Brady as your starting point, but obviously you've got the guys in front. What's it been like to see him this season?
Well, anyone that knows Greg Berhalter well, followed his what we call Greg Ball, knows that your keeper is a critical part of, obviously, defense, that's soccer 101, but offense as well, getting the play started out of the back. And as good as Chris Brady was, as promising as he was in his first couple of seasons under Ezra Hendrickson and then Frank Klopas, his play out of the back left a lot to be desired. And as hyped and as excited as people were about Chris Brady, everyone around the team said the next step for him is how can he play with quality out of the goalkeeper position? There was too many times he was launching balls out of bounds, uncompetitive first balls up the middle of the pitch. And that was the biggest difference last year you started to see. You started to see him really control the ball out of the back, make smart plays, which when in the opener against Houston, he looked a lot more like 2023-2024 Chris Brady. And Greg Berhalter came right out and said he was not happy with the way Chris Brady was, as strong and as forceful as I've seen Greg Berhalter be on an individual player in a season plus, and he did it in the first game of season two. Since then, he's been phenomenal out of the back, and that's going to be the difference for him if he's going to make the U.S. Men's National Team, which all signs point to a better and better likelihood he's going to be in that goalkeeper room. The improvement out of the back from him was what had to happen. No one had any questions about his abilities as a keeper in terms of his saving ability and his work around the net. It was...
Oh, we knew it was coming.
It's garbage day. Sorry, John.
No worries. It's all good.
The question for his development and his growth and his future was going to be how can he develop his skills out of the keeper position?
And did I see correctly that he's passing at 69%? I mean, that's nice, but 69% passing out of the back for a keeper. I mean, that's a heavy increase from years past.
Yeah, it's a key to what they want to do and build up. It's key that he is able to facilitate and get the defensive positioning right by time. There's going to be two or three a game that are going to make you pull your hair out as almost being a disaster, but they've been controlled. And so, you know, through six games, hasn't been an issue. There has not been a play out of the back issue. I say that, and we'll see what happens this weekend, but that was the issue last year, especially in the early going, is you saw some tragic mistakes early on out of the play, out of the back, that really put them in a hole. And they still found ways to have a nice season. That really felt like the next step was perfecting that play out of the back. Chris Brady is where it starts. You have to have a keeper like Chris. There's several other teams that play similarly, but he had to be better, and he has been. He's been phenomenal. He's team of the match day, had two of the more impressive saves he's had certainly this season, and is certainly making his case for the U.S. men's national team.
Phenomenal. Chris Brady, to see his game evolve, because there have also been, outside of his passing wanderlust, there have been those moments where outside the 18, you're kind of sitting there and you're going, okay, could you be a little less aggressive for me and kind of stay inside the 18 when it comes to offenses coming back down in transition? Is he staying at home more than we've seen in the past? Has he put the pith helmet and the machete kind of away off to the side a little bit?
Yes, is the short answer, and then I'll explain. I think when you have complete confidence in your middle four, right, your center backs, and then your holding midfield, whether that's Salatros, whether it's Jay Davila, to do what they need to do and do it with confidence and do it with skill, you don't have to be as aggressive out of your net. You don't have to worry about being a hero and being Mr. Everything. I think that was the problem at times, even last year, right? They gave up, I think, a club record amount of goals last season too. And defensively, it was still the issues, right? Offensively, scored 66 goals, second in the league. There was no issues, but defensively, it was still issues last year. And that comes with confidence. It's something that's sometimes hard to quantify, the confidence that a goalkeeper has and how that can unlock other parts of your game as a keeper and unlock other parts of your team. It's a domino effect. That's those soft skills that a lot of times can have difficulty in terms of analytics picking it up or detecting it. It's something you can see when a keeper's more comfortable in their box.
Outbound as of coming into this year, Barlow, Dowd, Chase Gasper, who retired, Kwame, Brian Gutierrez, Kutsias, Justin Reynolds, Kellen Acosta, Sam Williams, and Amari Glasgow. That was the outbound. The inbound, we mentioned Salatros, Franco, Mwazi, Jason Shukaluk, and since we cover MLS Next Pro here and we do the twos matches, we know what Jason brings to the table. Robin Lud, Josh Cohen, we know what Josh brings to the table. And then DeJohnay as well. When you look at the folks that have come inbound that we haven't had the chance to talk about, obviously limited minutes and some folks coming off the bench and such, the new faces, what else sticks out with you with the new faces coming in this year?
Yeah, I'll go to Robin Lud, right? We should have known what we were getting in Robin Lud, but it's still really impressive to see. And Martin Haile-Selassie, actually, this week in a piece in OnTap Sports, my broadcast partner Joe Chats, got to give a plug. I had a great time with Martin Haile-Selassie and really talked about the calm nature that Robin Lud brings and what can be a chaotic sport. He brings a level of calmness to the pitch that really, it sounds like, resonates. I mean, Martin Haile-Selassie called it out directly this week in that piece that Joe wrote and said his ability to keep things calm in chaos has really helped them thrive. Not to mention, he's been asked to play three different positions already. Started out right wing because of injuries, then has had to play centrally at times, then had to move over to the left. He's been a consummate professional the every step of the way, and every game in a fire kit, he's got a little bit better. It was kind of a rough first game or two, and I thought he played his best game with the Fire in the most recent one against Nashville.
10 points in the first six, 3-2-1, the second best defense in terms of goals allowed behind Nashville at 5 goals in 6 matches. When you look at this offense, I know that there probably is an expectation of you've only scored 8 in 6, which is 1 1/3, carry the 3 and hold the line over the top for the remainder of the calculator. When it comes to offense, are the fans still kind of sitting there going, okay, where's the offense with all of the names that we have? We're anticipating more here and it's not here. Or because of absences, is there patience?
The second part. Okay. I think the second part is the feeling I'm getting and certainly what I'm seeing. And again, when you've got guys that are having to play out of position, game in, game out, they have not had the same starting 11 twice yet. I think they've only been one game where they've had 10 of the 11 the same in back-to-back games. It's constantly moving pieces, which has also forced different formations and different tactics. And that way, they have not been able to settle into what they want to do on a game-in, game-out basis. They had pretty good health luck last year, especially among the top line. Hugo Kuiper's now dealing with a thing. you know, Philip Zinkernagel had to deal with a thing. Some of the midfield obviously has been in question as well. Franco's expected back after the World Cup break. But there's been guys, again, that have had to play out of position, and that's not an easy thing. It is not like going from X receiver to Z receiver, and as long as you know the routes, you can still run them and run your offense pretty effectively. It is a different thing when you're asking guys to play different positionally, and it's been pretty evident that guys have been working through it. Fortunately, like you said, 3-2-1, 6 points in 10 games, you'll take that.
Yeah, Max Anderson, Oppo Research. Yeah, Oppo Research with us here as Chicago gets ready for Atlanta. Okay, so then – I'll bite. Pop quiz time. Who's been playing out of position? Where have they been playing out of position? Formationally, what has been different than what is normally anticipated? So lay out the Webster's dictionary for us here.
Well, the first and foremost, and I mentioned him, but I'll go into detail, and deserves his flowers, is Marin Haile Selassie. I mean, just a consummate professional. Went from being a every game starter 3 years ago under Frank Klopas and Ezra Henriksen. Last year, reserve duty, right? I think only started a handful of games, 5 or 6 at the most. Came in reserve duty and maybe 10 more. And I think he played in roughly half the games. Now he's starting basically every game, and he started in a different position every single game, whether it's right back or right wing back, right wing. He started at left wing back. He started at center forward when Hugo Kuipers went out. And every single position he's played this season, he's played well. He has not had a bad game. He hasn't had an average game. Wow. Every single time out there, the guy is just a consummate professional. And I thought, you know, I maybe got a little bit over my skis, according to my color commentator, Joe Chats, but maybe one of his two best games as a Fire player happened when he had to play center forward in place of Hugo Kuipers, another new position. And he just keeps getting it done. He's the guy you need to deploy in different positions when you get guys that get bumps and miss, and he just is always available.
So then formationally, this week with Atlanta coming to town and the health issues that you know and the health issues that are being navigated, what, comma, are you anticipating, comma, with Atlanta coming to town, or do you even have any idea yet?
We're still figuring that out. We'll know a lot more today with Greg's Thursday availability. I think the dream is, right, is that solid two center back with the solid two in front of him of for now, Soleil, Tristan, Jade Avila. We'll see what that looks like when Franco gets back. There's a lot of questions. Those are good problems to have. For now, you've got some really good pieces. But I think that four solid in the back that allows your wing backs to get up, right, Leo Barroso and Andrew Gutman, Atlanta United, well familiar with his game. Oh, yeah. When that center four, that core four in the middle, can really hold things down and disrupt, it really allows those wings to get up. And at times, Soletro sometimes functions as a third center back at times. He really can flex throughout the field. So when they're humming, they're really putting a ton of pressure up the wings with guys like Barroso, and talk about another guy that I don't think's long for the MLS. It has a very, very bright future, the Portuguese international. Still only 20 years old. You know, when those guys are able to get up because they're playing confidently in the middle, this team is really, really dangerous. So that four in the back, whether they go 4-3-3, whether they go 4-3-2-1, it kind of can shift throughout the game. But this team's been at their best when they can play that core four in the back, allow the wing backs to get up, and allow that middle four to really control the pitch.
Is there, and I know that I'm already sitting here looking at transfer windows and things like that, but is there anything missing that Greg Berhalter sits there and goes, I need help here. I need assistance at this particular part, or I just need everybody to get healthy. I'm good standing pat where I am with my roster right now.
I hadn't thought about that yet. We're still pretty early, John. So give me just a second to think about that. I think as it stands right now, they're going to get a quasi transfer when Franco returns after the World Cup break from his ACL.
Got it.
That now, the caveat there being, I think we all know, even once you're back, it takes a few months to get back, and certainly playing at the level he was playing at the end of last season. That it seems like something that will come. Certainly monitor of several injuries. I don't think anything seems terribly long-term at the moment, but certainly keep an eye on. You know, defensively, they really shored up center back position. They've got Chris Cupps, who's the great American hope here going forward in terms of a center back at just 17 years old, and a ton of excitement around him. And he's their fourth center back right now. Joel Waterman has had to start a bunch, but that's because either Elliott's gotten injured, Mbawazi has played well, but Waterman's been the third center back. You've got Sam Rogers in the mix as well as your fourth. So defensively, they feel like they're in pretty good shape. Victor Radievich on the wingback spot has really pushed Andrew Gutman, or at the very worst, been a really capable backup on that right wing back. Johnny Dean, we all know and love Johnny
Dean.
Little
ball of hate, Johnny Dean.
So, as I'm talking through it, the conversation's been around Robert Lewandowski, right? That's been the rumor. I know where you're going, John. No one's ever going to say no to that. Do they desperately need that for a run? I don't think so. Would it help them? Sure. Now, that's on paper. What I can't say, I don't know Robert Lewandowski. I don't know this locker room. But I trust Greg Berhalter at this point that he does, right? With his experience, I trust that he can read the room. He knows a lot. And at this point, my trust is in Greg Berhalter. But to put a cap on your initial question, there's nothing I can really point to right now. They've got really good depth when they're healthy. Robin Lud's going to be an option off the bench. I mean, that's an MLS All-Star 2 years ago.
Okay. Yeah. And the Lewandowski was me burying the lead a little bit.
I beat you to it. Sorry, John.
No worries, man. It's all good. Oppo Research with our buddy Max Anderson as we get ready for Chicago and Atlanta. Is there anything from your mind that concerns you? I guess let me ask it this way.
Yeah.
What are you the most confident about from a Fire perspective as Atlanta comes to town? And what concerns you the most as Atlanta comes to town for this matchup?
What I'm most confident in is the Fire's defensive core, which feels insane to say after last season and the way last season went defensively. But it's just been a different team. I mean, 3 clean sheets through 6 matches for Chris Brady. They have looked so much better. And I mentioned those 3 or 4 moments on my opening comment about Mbawazi. Those 3 or 4 moments last year were in the back of the net, and that's been the difference. And so confidence-wise, the defensive core, assuming Jack Elliott's back full healthy, that he's fully recovered from sepsis, I don't know if folks are familiar with it. It is a really tricky thing because even once you physically feel fine, your body might not be. It's a really strange thing with the blood. I'm not a scientist here. I'm not a doctor. But one of the things that I keep hearing that you have to watch out for is even once you're healthy, you still got to kind of take it easy because it can relapse quickly or something along those lines. So that's a minor concern, but the fact that he was in full training, really good sign. What I'm concerned about is this feels like a bit of a trap game for the Fire, and I'll explain.
Okay.
You're coming off a massive win over Nashville, which most people didn't think was possible to get a full result, let alone a partial result. Mm-hmm. You have a ton of confidence. You're a little bit of talk of the league. You've got Chris Brady, team of the match day. Atlanta, we haven't really talked much about the other side of this equation. Tata's going to miss the game. They're coming off consternation, a really rough start to the season by all intents and purposes. So on paper, this should be a MLS team at home, riding high off a big win, and getting healthier. All signs point to this should be a Fire win. I won't say comfortable. Nothing's ever comfortable in the MLS. Nope. It should be a Fire win. That is what scares me, right? Anytime the complete reverse of how we went into Nashville. Ooh, man, now Joel Waterman scratch, Elliott off of sepsis, has to play center back. Ugo Kuypers isn't in, Martin has lost, and they find a way. So it's really the complete opposite concern I had going into last game, which was underconfidence. Now it feels like almost overconfidence. So this feels like a really important test this week of how clinical and professional this team can be moving forward throughout the rest of the season.
Okay. Like I said, I just wanted to get your thoughts from.
And John, if I could say one more thing as I say that out loud.
Sure.
I think the more impressive thing isn't the fact that if they having beaten Nashville, I think it'd be more impressive if they followed up with a win against Atlanta, having said all of that.
Yeah, because you don't want that trap game. You sit there and you're thinking about, yeah, okay, we've done great. And then you have the letdown, and then you have a team like Atlanta come to town. But traditionally, for Atlanta going to Chicago, it has been a very, very difficult place to play. There have been some wild results that have happened, whether you're talking Bridgeview or whether you're talking the spaceship. I mean, it is – it is a place where weird ish happens when it comes to this particular rivalry. I mean, yes, MBS has its own personality when it comes to this, but Chicago has been a very, very rough place to play for Atlanta United for various reasons and you know, circumstances. And that was why, you know, I wanted to try to pick your mm-hmm. brain about your vibe going in, coming off of that Nashville win.
Mm-hmm.
And so,
yeah, I think for Atlanta, first of all, right, you play in a dome versus playing in open air. That's always going to be a huge thing, I think, for Atlanta, no matter where they play. When they play indoors, even on the road, they're going to play better than playing on natural grass at Soldier Field. That is always, in my mind, going to be a tough one. As you say that, I'm looking up the weather for Saturday because I have not looked at that yet. But that can certainly play a part. And according to weather.com, 52. So it's going to be chilly by the time we get to kickoff. It's probably going to be in the 40s by the time we get to kickoff on Saturday. So that's another factor, right? You've got Atlanta coming up to Chicago in the Midwest in April. And that's going to be, looks like 10-mile-an-hour winds for now. But you never know on the lakefront what's going to come. So
no.
All of those mix of things, travel on the road and the MLS is hard. Playing, going from a dome to outdoor, artificial to natural, all of those, I think, factors in some combination into it being a tough road game traditionally for Atlanta.
No doubt about it. All right. So what is this about you and the marriage here in the summer? What is going on?
I don't know. Did you think I was the one that thought of where I can't? Why can't I do this? Is that there we go. Do you think I thought of these lovely pink flowers? Come on, John.
I mean, you could have an SO that likes to do things in a manner where you're making sure that the surroundings are nice and it's not just sports things.
What's happening? You've around the corner is now my sports memorabilia stuffed in a closet till we get bigger digs, which probably the next time I talk to you, actually move in next month. So
okay.
you'll see a different background probably the next time we talk.
Okay. How did you get a wedding date in the summer? That's always traditionally very tough.
Well, it's funny. So we got engaged last June and she's a teacher. So we get engaged right after she's done with school, and the way she operates, she went right into planning mode. Okay. And so we got a lot done before the summer was even out. I think we had a date by the 1st of July.
Wow.
So she wanted to get a lot done before she went back to school. I was supportive of that idea. I have contributed ideas. John, as you well know, that's about all you can do in this role. But we're really excited. Marry the love of my life. I can't wait. It's gonna be really fun this summer. And then actually before, you know, I knew for sure I was going to be back with the Fire this year. The wedding date was scheduled. It's during the World Cup break. But
there you go. The
honeymoon rolls into the first couple of games post-World Cup. So I'll miss a couple of games and have a really reliable backup that I'm looking forward to getting an opportunity.
There you go. So like I said, the boss was the same way. We got engaged New Year's Eve, New Year's Day. And because of this thing that we do for a living, she was like, okay, we could do one of two things. We can really go quick and do it in the summer, or we can wait a year, go through American football season and do it in mid-January. And we ended up getting married MLK weekend.
Mm.
And it ended up being the warmest weekend on record for that particular time. And so what that does is that gives everybody that extra day to get out of town and go back to where they were. And so that was how we were because we were like, okay, so engaged in January, turn around June, middle of soccer season, not really, you know, might not be something to do, but yeah. So we deferred, went to January, everything worked out. So but yes, I was the same way as you. So what if I've got this idea. Okay, cool. Great. Fine. Just suggestions. They're just kind of guideposts. And I'm drafting off of you. I'm just like, whatever you're looking for, I'm right there with you.
Yeah, love exactly. it. Now, John, I gotta ask you.
Yeah.
When can I get you up to Chicago for one of these games? Do I have to beg you? Do I have to bribe you with a steak dinner? What do I have to do?
Well, Mike and Jason are coming. So Atlanta, you'll be able to see Mike and Jason coming on Saturday. So they'll be up there. So you get to say hi to Mike and Jason. That's stage one of all of this.
Okay. All right.
So Atlanta United's radio, they always travel. So Mike and Jason will be up there. They're leaving tomorrow to get up there. Tomorrow night, so they're locked in place, and then they head to the spaceship and everything like that. So yeah, you'll say hi to Mike and Jason first, and then you can give me ish behind my back to the two of them when you see them at the press box. As always, my friend, thanks for starting your day there in God's time zone with us for Opposition Research. Hit the plug for me really quickly.
Yeah, at Max Anderson 1456 on Twitter and Instagram to follow me. And then on WLS for our broadcasts at 890 here in Chicago that obviously are simulcast for the home game. So Saturday night, if you want to hear the home radio of the Chicago Fire, you can toggle that English radio option and hear me and my partner Joe Chats.
As always, my friend, great to see you. Enjoy the rest of your day, and may the producers continue barking at the garbage man.
Appreciate that. Talk to you soon, John.
See you soon. That's always great to catch up with Max and find out what's going on the radio station in Chicago that is commonly referred to as WLS. That's how we do it. So that's how that goes. Yeah, you have to sing the ID. Always great to catch up with Max to find out what's going on with Chicago Fire, whether they're playing Atlanta United or not. It's always a great exercise in finding out what's going on as Greg Berhalter continues to be in charge up there in Chicago. This is the best of SDHAM from the Soccer Down Here Network. John Nelson here with you, and one of the big matches in the Eastern Conference comes to us from the Bank of America Stadium in Charlotte, coming up on Saturday. And for the Saturday showcase on Apple TV, the crew calling it this time around, Danny Higginbotham and this gentleman, Steve Cangelosi. Cangyman breaks it all down for us here in segment number two. He's in early. He's on the Tom Coughlin plant. 5 minutes early, you're on time. If you're on time, you're late. And if you're late, the door is shut and you can't come in. It's always good to have Steve Cangelosi come and join us and find out what's on his mind as we head into yet another weekend. It's been far too long, my friend. Good to see you.
Good to see you. You are my last order of business before I head to the airport and heading for Charlotte. And by the way,
yes, sir.
I don't think Wilfred Zaha wants me to see him play. The last time I was in Charlotte was game one of the playoffs against New York City. He was suspended then. And you got to give the guy credit. 5 yellow cards in 6 games to start the season. That's not easy.
No, it is not. And so he will be in street clothes, and he'll be watching Charlotte and Nashville as you and Danny get to mention everything about that one at the bank. So then, okay, comma, he asked, comma, how does Charlotte make up for that? Is it Toklamati? Is it young folks like Rodolfo Aloco? What are you looking at in this one?
The one thing I'm fairly confident of is that they're not going to move Pep Biel anywhere on the field other than where he's been, because he has been exceptional at the 10 to start this season. And that, to me, is maybe the most important thing for Charlotte out of the gate as they wrap up this 5-game homestand on Saturday night. Because one avenue of possibly rectifying this was to move Biel out wide, which he's done before. I can't see that happening. So the obvious replacement for Wilfred Zaha in the starting 11 is Liel Abada. Or should I say it should be the obvious replacement? I'm not sure that that's the manner in which they will go. They have some other options here. They can try De La Torre out there. They could use Tiger Smalls. And you know what this says, John? You know, there's quite a body of work already for Liel Abada, right? He's played better than 60 games in MLS. He's a designated player, and still we're not at that point where you put his name in ink in the starting 11. And that's something that I think the fans now are recognizing. And the question is, how long does Dean Smith and management of Charlotte FC go on with this? But I expect him to play. But I wouldn't bet the house on it on Saturday.
So then how much of a leash do you give it? You know, from all the time that you've been spending looking at Eastern Conference, how long of a leash are you giving this situation before you have to sit there and go, yeah, we might as well try and cut bait here?
Well, I think that the natural stop point for everybody in MLS, including Charlotte this season, is that World Cup break. Once you get past Memorial Day weekend, then it's almost a reset, right, for every front office in MLS, where you're going to have time before you kick a ball again 6.5 weeks later to assess what you are and what you want to be and what you can be. And I think that's probably the natural point where a lot of things will be addressed. Zaha's future has to be addressed at some point between now and then. Let's look at what Charlotte is, John, right? A top four team in the Eastern Conference last year. And they started the playoffs at home for the first time in their existence. But in a way, wouldn't you agree that that was disappointing for them as well, considering what they were for a good stretch of the middle of the season? They had a 15-game undefeated streak in all competitions at one point last year. And to only finish as high as fourth, I think it left a lot on the table. And I think the real challenge is going from good to super good in this league. And I think they're one of those teams that's in that category right now. So, yeah, I would say early summer is when we're going to have to take a long, hard look at what we're doing with that spot.
And how long can Christian Kolina continue to stand on his head and bail you out of Lord knows how many games he has done? I mean, it has turned into one of those things. Sun rises in the east. You pay your taxes by 5 days from now, and Christian Kolina stands on his head. I would imagine there's going to be a point where he'd be sitting there going like, man, I'm tired of this. I'm too tired. I'm an old man. Give me some help here, you know?
Well, I do think that, by the way, one of the great signings in MLS over the last 5 years, isn't it? He came here December of 2021. I think I have it on my chart, from Ludogorets, the champions in the Bulgarian league at the time. And yeah, the league leader in saves, and I guess that's a badge of honor when we address it that way, and those words will probably come out of my mouth in the first 10 seconds of the broadcast on Saturday, but they would prefer it not be that way, right? And I think the challenge for this team is Kolina continuing to do what he does as they adjust now to some different center backs on this team, because Morris Agyeman comes into the equation to play with Tim Ream, who, of course, is not getting any younger, can't run like he used to run when he was 21 years old, but still somehow, some way, still finds himself the real fabric of that back line and also a probable starter for the United States at the World Cup this summer, right? So Kolina navigates all of that. They're playing with fire if it continues this way, but I think those are the things that are utmost on Dean Smith's mind. He had the stingiest defense in the Eastern Conference just 2 years ago. I think he'd like to get back to that.
And then you have that back line that you're talking about with Charlotte going up against, I mean, A, B, C, D when it comes to some of the top offensive dudes out there. It's like, okay, Surridge, Mukhtar, and then, oh, yeah, by the way, we're just going to take Christian Espinosa. Oh, you forgot to sign the paperwork. Okay, hey, about coming over here? I mean, you're talking about playing with fire, man. That's some heavy-duty stuff that you got to be putting up with this weekend, you know?
Yeah, I'm excited to see this with my own two eyes for the first time. I mean, I've watched them on Apple TV, obviously, up until this point. Now, the X factor here, John, is what is BJ going to do with the starting lineup? Yeah. Because remember, he has the quick turnaround to Tuesday night. They have a very difficult assignment going to Club America, and it's a competition I know they're taking very seriously. And the turnaround here is, it's always harder to go Saturday to Tuesday than Tuesday to Saturday, right? There's the one less day, and now there's the travel as well to Mexico City. So this is quite a challenge that they have in front of them. There's going to be some squad rotation. How much of it is enacted with the top three of that attack? I couldn't get Callahan to bite on that when I spoke with him yesterday. Perhaps he's still up in the air about how many minutes he wants to allot each one of them. There is one scenario where maybe he sits all three for the first half and says, I want to just stay in this game for 60 minutes and then bring on my big guns and go for the result that way. So it'll be an interesting call for him. But to your point, it's quite an approach by the front office, isn't it? And I understand the mindset of Mike Jacobs, and he's not the only general manager or sporting director in the league that takes this approach, because we're fascinated by goals in this country, right? We love high-scoring games, which quite often are the residue of defensive mistakes. But he's gone all in with three DP spots with his players up top. It's not that unique of an approach, but I wonder over the course of 34 games how much they might get exposed elsewhere on the field as time goes on. But to your point, this could easily be the highest scoring team in MLS this year.
And it reminds me of like the 1980s Edmonton Oilers. You know, it's like, it's like, okay, so it's Curry and Anderson and Messier and Gretzky and Esatikin. And it's like literally I'm staring at this and I'm going, yeah, this is some high powered stuff. And the lineup, to your point, that they had against Club America in the midweek, you had a back line of Baker, Whiting, Maleji, Palacios, and Nahar. In front of them, it was Matthew Corcoran, who might be 12 years old. He might be having a birthday at some point here soon.
They tell me he's 20.
Having covered him, you know, all these years from MLS Next Pro, it's like, man, I've covered you for so long. You've got Corcoran and Yazbek, and then you have Madrigal with the three Musketeers up top. The three, you know, it's all mm-hmm. of a sudden I just had a Chevy Chase, Martin Short, Steve Martin visual pop into my head where the three of them are on horses. But I mean, you look at that back line and they've been piecing it together, very, very defensive, doing what BJ Callahan wants them to do. It's an interesting contrast. It's like you've got your big guns up top, but then you've got the guys at the back that are holding it together, and they're the ones that aren't getting a whole lot of press just because they might not even be household names in their own household at points.
I think that the interesting thing is that the window for this group might not be an elongated one. And that's why I think the occasions like Tuesday night for them are very big. Surridge still has a lot in front of him, right? He's 27. He's just entering the prime of his career, you might say. But Espinosa's been around the block. He's 31. Mukhtar, to me, is the most fascinating element of this troika that we've referenced here, because I never really was quite sure whether or not he would get back to the level that we saw in 2022 when he was named the MVP of this league, and quite deservingly so. But it's almost as if, as Surridge really found his finishing game, Mukhtar had this second chapter of greatness that we're still experiencing at this point. I don't know how many more kicks at the can this group will get together. Now, Nashville is well run. They have a great fan base. They're very well coached by BJ Callahan. But this nucleus, as we see it, we might only see one or two more years for this particular group to seriously chase trophies. And that's why I think they're all in, and they're going to be dangerous for anybody who gets in that path. I think there's a real chance they could add one or two more pieces of hardware after that U.S. Open Cup last year.
And when Hani Mukhtar was just Hani Mukhtar and then nine other guys and Joe Willis, it was okay because that positional gravity, you could double him, you could bracket him, and it was easier to defend against Nashville than it is now because of all of these different options that you're getting. And that might be a byproduct of Gary Smith versus BJ Callahan when it comes to approach. But now that you have all these other things, Mukhtar can breathe again. And you know, he can kind of work his way around, and he can kind of get hidden, and he can work his way through and all this kind of stuff. It's amazing what when you get friends to help you out, how you can have a renaissance like you're talking about.
I remember talking to Dax McCarty when he was in Nashville, and this was during that terrific Leagues Cup run that they had to the final, the very first edition of the tournament back in 2023. They lost that epic game against Messi and Inter Miami at the end in a shootout. And this was during the run. I did one of those games, and the results were coming. They were playing well. Geodis Park was filled with 30,000 for a lot of these games. And I remember him telling me before one game, he said, this is not sustainable. He said, we're asking too much of the same guy. And we keep having this conversation of secondary scoring. Where will it come from? And we've been unable to crack that code. Well, I think that feeling lingered, even when Surridge first joined this team and had only a couple of games toward the tail end. And I think we went into that first offseason with Surridge as part of the group where people were wondering, is this an overrated signing? Is this going to work out? Then he has 12. And then last year, the breakout with 24. And this season, the possibilities seem endless. And when he scores them in bunches. And I expect we're going to see a few more waves of that this year.
Another couple of minutes are with Steve Cangelosi before he hops on a plane. And because we've already had Devin Kerr stuck in Delta Crown Club at B Concourse at Hartsfield. He's already
airport delays in the United States of America in 2026.
I don't know. one of those things. Looking at all things being equal, we'll take it a team at a time. If the, if the Three Musketeers start for Nashville and, BJ wants to go all full bore from, moment zero until he's got a comfortable lead and he thinks he can get the result in the door, who do you think are those second level guys, the foot soldiers, the ones that don't get all the press, the ones that won't be in the spot mm-hmm. shadow off the top, that will make things successful for Nashville? We could have already talked about them. They could have been on the table. Who are those second level guys for you for Nashville to be successful on the weekend?
Well, I'm going to give you one on each team, if that's an acceptable answer. Okay. Because Absolutely. There's a guy we don't talk enough about, and he's replaced Walker Zimmerman, who was 2-time defender of the year in this league. And that's Maxwell Waleji, who's in his first year as an MLS defender. Couple of things about this man who's 24 and he's just joined the league from Ghana. He's got tremendous pace. And a lot of times we equate that with the ability to get forward in order to make recovery runs back. But when you think about the way that Nashville plays, right, with Nahar on one side and Lovitz generally on the other, sometimes it's Reed Baker Whiting, as you alluded to. A lot of that quickness has to do with lateral movement, going right and going left. And he's got that. And he becomes an integral part of everything that they do. And I also think you'll see him dribble the ball forward more than most center backs in the league. So that would be my answer for Nashville. From the flip side, I would go back to Ashley Westwood, who I think is affected by Zaha's absence more than any other player. Because remember, Zaha's fouled more than any other guy. Last year was 122 times. So what do you lose? You lose those plays where Zaha is fouled. Those fouls lead to free kicks. Those free kicks lead to genuine scoring opportunities by a fantastic set-piece taker in Ashley Westwood. So my mind is set on Westwood and how he seeks to control the game from the Charlotte perspective here without Zaha. He is, according to his coach, still one of the finest physical specimens that you're going to see on this team at the age of 36. He wears the captain's armband, and that's not for just for show. He's the guy who generally, I'm told, in training, ready to play every game. So I want to see how Westwood can impose his will on this game without Zaha in the lineup. I think he's got it in him. I think we've got a fair fight. And I do think from Charlotte's perspective, you need this. You're playing well at home. This is a 5-game homestand that wraps up, and the schedule evens out by the time you get to 34. Bank those points now. You're going to need them in the end.
Mm-hmm. So if you would please, sir, ellipses, go ahead and hit the promo for me so you can go ahead and get out the door and go to the airport.
Apple TV. Hey, this is the Walmart Saturday Showdown. Did you know that?
Yes, I did. And I believe we have a shipment coming from that particular store to the front door with some stuff for the weekend.
So, yeah. Yes, 7:30 p.m. on Apple TV, Saturday night. Danny Higginbotham is my partner in the booth. Jillian Sakovitz will be sideline for us. She always has some interesting nuggets during the course of the game. We look forward to working with her for the first time this year. And this should be a good one on a Saturday night in April. I'm looking forward to it.
What do you think about Danny and the shininess up top? He has eschewed the follicles now.
Follically challenged, is he? You're saying?
I thought he was just getting rid of it. Last time I saw him, it's just clean.
You know what? Let's go with that. He's getting rid of it. Yeah, sounds good.
Have a great broadcast, my friend. It's great to see you. Don't be a stranger, and we'll see you soon.
All right, John. Take care. Thanks for having me, buddy.
You bet. Steve Cangelosi. Always great to catch up with Steve and find out what's going on in the world of Steve Cangelosi and with Danny Higginbotham on Apple TV. It's always great to find out what's going on with the two of them and the fact that they are going to be calling that big matchup in the Eastern Conference early on. And it's going to be very, very cool to find out what that environment's going to be like for a team that a lot of folks have high hopes on in Nashville. Are they for real? Are they taking it easy this week, getting ready for a matchup on Tuesday in CONCACAF Champions Cup? We'll find out later on today. This is the Best of SDHAM from the Soccer Down Here Network. John Nelson here with you. And time to check in on what's going on in the Canadian Premier League as they trial a lot of different things that have been passed by IFAB. Canadian Premier League raised their hand, and they were like, yeah, we'll give that a shot. We'll see what it looks like. Coming to everything from the Wenger offside to holding on to the ball if you are either waiting to throw the ball in or if you're trying to institute a goal kick situation, if you're down injured, if you're lollyganging as a substitute, or in addition to all of those things, there's some other stuff that's being trialed in the Canadian Premier League as well. And for that and finding out what the immediate feedback has been from match week number one, Executive Vice President, the Canadian Premier League, Costas Smyrniotis, to get the lowdown on everything going on in CPL here in 26. When we saw this go down, we were like, okay, hey, we've got to reach out here. We got to find out about anything and everything going on in the Canadian Premier League because there's some stuff happening here in the 2026 season. Kickoff was last weekend, by the way, and you can catch it on like FS2 and onesoccer.ca and all that stuff. A lot of new stuff going on. And so we raised our collective hand and we were like, hey, we'd like to ask some questions. And joining us is someone who is not on a plane for the first time in a couple of days. Costas Smyrniotis, the EVP of the league. Good to see you this morning. Thanks for dropping in.
Happy to be with you. Happy to be on the ground and not on a plane so we can make this happen.
No doubt. How many miles do you think you put in on a year in planes and cars and hotels and things?
I don't even want to check, to be honest. Right? So let's not even go there.
But at least you're getting the miles and points out of the deal, right?
I hope there's some perks at the end of the road. We'll see. We'll see.
Okay. Reason that we wanted to have you on was to break down everything that is going on that is new. And we with the rule changes, implementations, trials, and all of that kind of stuff. And it's stuff that here we have seen in MLS Next Pro in some aspects, and it has rolled over to IFAB, and IFAB was like, yeah, okay. And the Canadian Premier League raised their hand and were like, yeah, okay, we'll try that, and we'll try some other things too. First thing I wanted to talk about was the Wenger offside rule and the idea that you were like, yeah, we'll try that here. How far back of a discussion was it to have that as a trial this season in the CPL?
Well, you know, the try piece is, you know, something that sometimes it's just a little bit, you know, reactive and it's just being in the right place at the right time. I think the key with us and being such a young league, yet very ambitious league, is just to kind of get ahead of these things. Innovation is at the core of kind of what we do here, and it's really important values of our competition. So you try and have these discussions ahead of time to kind of figure out where you can modernize the game, where there are opportunities, because, you know, as a young league too, you're not stuck to a lot of history. So you have the opportunity to engage the game in a different way. You have a different, you know, ability to engage fans in a different way, all for trying to create a more positive scene on the field and off the field. And so for us, you know, having these discussions, and who better to go to than, you know, FIFA to be able to kind of have these discussions and understand what are they thinking, you know, a few years out, And in all those discussions, you know, this topic came about that, you know, they had been trialing it in various competitions, lower level competitions. But now was the time really that they wanted to push this to a first division level competition, proper national competition. So it just kind of made sense. And then all of a sudden the conversation started getting real late last year about, you know, this is important to our top management at FIFA. Can you make it equally important at the Canadian Premier League? So we have a proper assessment about what this can or can't be going forward. And, you know, in all, you know, once those conversations completed, then we were up and running, ready to go starting last weekend with our opening weekend.
How much of an adjustment or conversations was it with all of the heads of state, with the individual franchises? Yeah, we want to do this. Yeah, we're in. We'll go for it. How much back and forth was there, and everybody in from the absolute beginning on this?
Yeah, I'll tell you. Well, one thing, we're very fortunate. You know, all our clubs and the leadership at all our clubs are always on board when it comes to opportunities to better the game. When it comes to opportunities, especially with something like this, where the ultimate goal of the trial is to assess a recalibration, if you like, of the offside rule, which to lead to more attacking football, which means more entertaining football, which ultimately means more people paying attention. And when you kind of explain it that way, I think for ownership and all stakeholders in the game, they're very positive and very supportive. So we've had that with our ownership groups and obviously all the clubs from day one. So we're very fortunate, which makes opportunities like this a lot easier to act on.
So after match week one, has the league office gotten feedback one way or the other, or are folks just still kind of riding it out right now?
Well, I think there's week one, of course, was a lot of anticipation. We had a lot of global attention around the league, like the amount of inquiries coming in globally about, you know, the offside rule. A little bit on FVS as well, which is kind of a complementary piece that we've added to this, has been tremendous because everybody's curious. You know, and some leagues are looking at this and saying, okay, what does it really look like? Everybody has some assumptions about what the new interpretation of the offside can be. We're now going to start seeing it in, you know, real life. So, you know, you're seeing more and more people tune into the matches. You're seeing more people reach out to colleagues at our clubs, reach out to us, because everybody's curious. Now, to come out with some major takeaways from week one is probably still a little too early. It's going to be an ongoing process. There's a whole process built around evaluating what do the games look like, from tactics to, you know, physical traits to, you know, everything you could possibly think of that FIFA's taking the lead on. And, you know, once they kind of have some materials ready, we'll obviously share that with everybody. But, you know, all in all, I thought it was a very positive weekend with a lot of great buzz for our competition and our teams and obviously our players.
You're kind of stealing my notes here and reading my follow-up questions. I wanted to get into FVS and everything else that's being instituted this season as well. We've seen it in the U18s, U21 tournaments and things like that when it comes to CONCACAF, where we have seen the card challenges from coaches and everything. Hey, go take a look at this. That kind of a thing. Why bring in FVS as a part of everything else? Was it just something that you're like, yeah, okay, we see this and we'll see if it can work here as well? What was the background on that?
Well, we wanted also, as we went down this topic of the offside trial, to have some complementary officiating technology available as well. And we wanted to kind of get the right technology to best complement. The trial is at the forefront of everything we're doing, the offside trial. So you wanted to ensure that, you know, that stayed at the forefront. VAR right now is obviously a big topic in world football. It's actually, in my opinion, VAR is such a good technology that has led us to an offside trial because, you know, offsides now are being called very much on the margin. So the idea was, could you take this other officiating support technology, FVS, which is also in a trial phase? It would probably be a better match for the offside trial. And at the same time, now for FIFA, this is a great benefit of, you know, evaluating both at the same time. And to be honest, I was really intrigued also with the challenge system. I just thought that it could create a little bit less complexity around the whole video review system. And, you know, for people in the stands or people watching on broadcast, you know, especially in North American sport where a challenge system is very much recognized and accepted, why not see how that works in our sport as well? And really, is that turn into better fan engagement? Do people really accept it? Do people get off their seats when they see a coach, you know, give an official a card? You know, a little bit the opposite effect. And, you know, as you're laughing, I'm laughing as well, you know, about that topic. So we have this great trial. Why don't we put a technology next to it that makes a little bit more sense, you know, for the actual offside trial? And we evaluate both at the same time.
So when it came to instituting the infrastructure that's attached to FVS slash, and to a lesser degree, probably just the implementation of the offside rule, how much of an investment was it for the league to make sure that you had the infrastructure in place so FVS could be in its purest 100% form? And so you've got everything that you need when it comes to equipment and analysis for it.
Yeah, no, it was great. Like, we're very fortunate, you know, with One Soccer that, you know, we have a really great production. We got all the cameras in place already in all our matches, you know, more than enough to handle VAR, let alone FES. But if you look at the backbone of it's FES and VAR, the exact same backbone in terms of, you know, camera requirement, in terms of the actual software in the background, how everything gets looked at. You know, we have a virtual offside line. It's the exact same thing. The only difference really is in the people that are kind of behind the camera. VAR obviously having officials, and, you know, FES only utilizing a replay operator. And that's really the only difference between the two. So it was quite the undertaking to have it in place for the start of the season, but we just had a great team here on the ground, are obviously to be able to put this all together and hit the ground running on week one.
How much of a learning curve was it for all of the officials that are sanctioned for CPL play to go, okay, what you knew, you kind of have to put to the side. We're using the Wenger version this year, and then you'll also have FES to help you out. How much of an adjustment was it for them?
Well, I think there's been quite a bit, and I won't speak for them, but, you know, we have, you know, the new offside interpretation. You got FES. We also introduced early some of the new IFAB rules that were going to take place starting at the World Cup. So we've obviously brought them in, very similar to the goalkeeper rule from last year, which was very successful now on throw-ins and goal kicks. You know, and I noticed it on the weekend. I was at a couple of our matches, and, you know, referees already got their hand up counting down goal kicks. And so you already saw the play speed up a little bit, especially late in the game when maybe a club is up. You know, you're taking a little bit extra time in a goal kick. So you already saw it in effect. So I think we need to be supportive of officials. It's not easy. It's the first time around. But, you know, as the season goes along, I'm sure everything will get better and better.
Yeah, and you mentioned those rules and those others that we're used to seeing through MLS Next Pro. You're looking at throw-ins and goal kicks where lollygagging is no longer allowed. I think that's the official soccer term, lollygagging. You're not supposed to do that anymore. And it's if you're deliberately delaying a throw-in or a goal kick, it's a five-second visual countdown. And then if you don't put the ball in play after the five-second visual, it's either flipping the possession on the throw-in or turning it into a corner. Then substitutions, like I said, this is what we're used to seeing from MLS Next Pro. It's got to be done in an expeditious manner where 10 seconds, then it's the board's up, 10 seconds, you got to get out, or it's, you know, as I've been referencing it, it's basically a power play for a minute. You know, the folks can understand man advantage and that kind of a thing, and then off-field treatment and assessment. In MLS Next Pro, it's 10 seconds. A referee's discretion, understanding the situation, but, hey, you got to get up or it's going to be another minutes power play or, you know, man advantage. With those three, when you look at those three as a group, obviously you're looking to speed the game up and you're trying to take kind of the gamesmanship out of it too.
Correct. And I think if you look at just kind of when FIFA kind of came out with their decision alongside IFAB, I think that was front and center. It was about speeding up a little bit the tempo of the match, you know, and ensuring that we have a little bit less disruption in the game. I mean, there's no doubt with the video technology, there's been, you know, a little bit of disruption during matches. and this is trying to recalibrate everything. So this is kind of looking at other parts of the game where we can win back some time. And, you know, and I think they'll have that effect. I thought that, you know, last year when there was a little bit of concern around the goalkeeper topic, it was a non-issue. I thought it worked very well. And on the weekend, I'll give an example. I had going into the weekend, I thought, I saw a little bit of concern or read about some concern around, you know, long throw-ins that have crept back into the game and whether this new rule would kind of take those away. And, you know, got it this weekend. I saw quite a few long throw-ins. So players are smart. They know how to adapt to rules and they figure it out. And just give them the tools and they will do what they got to do, which they do really well in our competition. So I was really glad to see some of those takeaways on the weekend.
EVP of the Canadian Premier League, Kostas Smirniotis, hanging out with us, breaking down all of the new pages in the back of the book that they're instituting this season that really need to be at the front of the book a lot of the time. When you thought and you were bringing all of these new implementations online, did you burn up your phone lines and sit there and talk to other folks in other leagues and other countries to get feedback if they've instituted this, if they've done this? Did you talk to MLS Next Pro? What was your back and forth from an executive standpoint with other leagues and other individuals on your level when you were thinking, yeah, we're going to do this next year?
Yeah, you're always checking and through FIFA. I mean, obviously that was starting point, but we're part of the World Leagues Forum, which is a great organization bringing together, you know, many of the top competitions globally. So it's always a good opportunity there with colleagues to kind of speak what's working in your competition and, you know, vice versa, what's working here. So there were conversations, and I think that's now the curiosity is, oh, you know, you're actually going to do this. So everybody's kind of sitting back and watching and, you know, trying to understand what it means and, you know, obviously looking for some feedback as well because, you know, there's an opportunity next year, whether the trial continues or whether some, you know, there's a decision that, you know, this is the new way forward one way or another, it will affect everybody. So it's great to have colleagues in the space globally to be able to kind of have these discussions and learn from them and vice versa. So it's going to be an interesting year for sure.
And I know that we're talking about something down the line, and I know that you probably have your self-imposed guideposts. What would your timetable be to figure out, yeah, okay, we're going to bring this back? What are your markers to sit there and go levels of success for A, B, C, D, and E? Yeah, we'll bring this back. No, we won't bring this back. What are you looking for when it comes to that?
Yeah, well, I think it's going to be a holistic view. I mean, the trial is ultimately led by FIFA, and we're here to support. So we're going to take a lot of the guidance from there and kind of the takeaways from their kind of research. They're putting a very big research team around this as well. To better understand and answer a lot of questions around it. So once that's in place, then I think we'll sit down as a good partner with them and really understand what's the best next steps here. And if the next steps are this is being implemented, well, then, you know, CPL is one of many in terms of, you know, this being the norm going forward, or if the opportunity is, and we've seen great fan engagement, we've seen great acceptance, we've seen our teams adapt, we see in a league that we are currently where, you know, stuff like, you know, goals in our league are at a very healthy level, attacking football, ball in play is at a healthy level within our competition. As long as we don't see deterioration in metrics that for me are more about the entertainment value of the match, then, you know, we'll continue along with the project for sure.
Because there's a fine line between increasing entertainment value. And I know a lot of folks that are looking at the Wenger rule offside and sitting there going, okay, it's going to be like the NHL back in the 80s with Edmonton, where it's going to be like 7-6 and all that kind of stuff. Is there any concern of straddling that line at all?
To be honest, no, because again, it comes back to what I kind of said earlier is in general, we're already a little bit of, you know, an attacking minded competition. We've seen that over the years. But, you know, I have a lot of faith. There's a tremendous amount of good work being done within our clubs. Our clubs are playing some, you know, very good football, coaches in place within our competition. They're very good at what they do. And, you know, if, you know, as long as you give them the parameters, they will figure out the best way to be able to work, you know, within their style, within their philosophy, you know, within those parameters. So everybody adjusts. And when you adjust, some will adjust in terms of, you know, their attacking play. Some will adjust in terms of their defensive play. But ultimately, I don't see you know, a big change in what we're currently seeing today.
Are there any other parts of the game that for you as an executive vice president that you think need to be addressed, need to be fine-tuned, buttoned up, whether it's concussion protocols and subs or anything like that? What else is on that big whiteboard that's off camera on the to-do list for the Canadian Premier League that I don't see right now?
Yeah, I think for the most part on the rules side, you know, it's complementary to, you know, like I mentioned earlier, to FIFA and all the topics that are on board there. I'm totally on board about in terms of the whole match tempo and ball in play. So anything that encourages that, I think, you know, what's taken place over the last 2 years in terms of changes have been considerable. So, you know, how much more comes after that, I don't know, but I think we're in a much better spot in terms of the goal kick, you know, goalkeeper throw in. So I think we're addressing all of that for sure. I think just now what's going to be the next evolution of the video officiating technology, you know, which obviously works into the match tempo piece as well to ensure there's not too much disruption. I think we're already starting to address injuries in a better way as well. We just want the game moving. We want the game, you know, a good flow in the game and obviously providing a good product to our fans. So in that sense, I think the rules topic will be dealt with, you know, by our friends at FIFA within the actual competition. For us, we look at it more about just kind of roster composition, how we're encouraging more and more quality use of young domestic talent. You know, ultimately, you know, if you're looking for a Canadian player, it's the Canadian Premier League that you're coming to. So we've put a lot of those mechanisms in place over the years, and you're starting to see it resonate more and more where we're starting to find the next stars in Canadian football. And they're within our clubs, they're actually getting meaningful minutes, meaningful development, and a platform from which then they can move on to a much bigger competition.
Yep, and you're making noise in the CAN Champ, and you're making noise in CONCACAF in the CONCACAF Champions Cup as well. And it's great to see that. And I know that you know, those of us that know your last name, I know that we're kind of keeping an eye on the folks that are in Hamilton for a particular franchise as well, and seeing what's going on there. I cannot thank you enough for doing this, especially out of number one match week and everything that is attached to all of that. I can't thank you enough for this. It's been a great education finding out what's going on in the Canadian Premier League. One more question for you. For someone who hasn't been watching the CPL, what are they missing out on by not watching and getting them to watch? What are they missing out on?
Well, I think what they're missing out probably is you know, some really good football. And sometimes, you know, we get stuck on all the other stuff, but ultimately we come back to the game, and I always try and never lose sight of the game. And, you know, and for a league going into its eighth season in challenge in terms of building a national league and then building eight clubs and, you know, more to follow, the quality of the play, anybody who watches our competition, that's the first thing they say, wow, that's not what I expected. The production of the matches, how they're presented, when you package it all up, it's something really cool in terms of, you know, football entertainment. So anybody who has a chance, I encourage them to do the same. It looks like, John, you've had the opportunity as well. So we really appreciate that. You know, and we're really ambitious. We're ambitious as a competition. We want to continue getting better. We will continue getting better, and we will be the home of, you know, some of the best young Canadian talent in the game.
So if we can bookmark that particular part of this conversation, I'd like to have you back at some point so we can talk about the league in general, how certain new franchises are going about their talent acquisition a certain way that's different from everybody else, and just talk about the growth of the league. Is it okay if we bookmark this and have you come back?
John, this conversation has been very enjoyable. I would definitely love to do it again.
Absolutely cool. EVP. That means he's a Grand Exalted Poobah of the Canadian Premier League.
Costas, I'll take it.
I can't thank you enough, and definitely we'll come back and visit. And I can't thank everybody up there at the league office enough. Go get a brunch or go get your second cup of coffee. It's great to see you, my friend, and don't be a stranger. We'll catch up with you soon.
Thank you, John. Keep up the great work.
It's always great to catch up and find out what's going on with our friends to the north, whether it's with our friend Christian Jack or whether it's a chance to catch up with EVP Costas Smyrniotis and find out what's going on. And yes, we do plan on circling back as the season goes along to find out what the latest is with rules and with teams and with one team in particular that is adopting a particular philosophy when it comes to bringing in talent. That is the new team, FC Super. We'll find out what's going on in the CPL as the season rolls along. Once again, thanks to all of our guests this week. Thanks to Costas Smyrniotis. Thanks to Steve Cangelosi. Thanks to Max Anderson. Thanks to you for breaking everything down and listening and joining the run every single week when it comes to what's going on here in the sport of soccer at the Best of SDHAM. Soccer Down Here, once again, follow Soccer Down Here on all of your social media. SDHAM available on Twitch, on X, and on YouTube, and then archived later in audio form and all the other ways that it can be archived, all in one place, Soccer Down Here on all your socials. For everybody at SDH, for Nick, for Jarrett, for Jason, for Maddie, for Sophia, for Vanessa, I'm John Nelson. Thanks for dropping by. For the Best of SDHAM, mucha plata, y'all. Play it safe. We'll catch up with you again next week.